Hey, Chris.
Hey, Robin.
Can I finish my breakfast?
Well, exciting day today. We have another guest in the studio.
Hello.
Robin Lim. I'm going to get your title wrong here, potentially. It's very fancy now. The Enterprise Engineering Director at Handshake.
Yeah, I'm still not used to that title, but yeah, effectively that's it. The Director of Engineering for our enterprise teams.
It's a mouthful. But we're really excited to dig in today. A lot of topics around engineering management and hear about your path going from an IC to management. It sounds like maybe back and forth a couple times and ultimately going all in on the management path and working your way to director of engineering and having managers underneath you now. But yeah, maybe just to start, would you mind giving a little bit of, you know, who you are and kind of your path to how you got to how you got this really long job title?
Sure. Yeah, so my career started off in 2003, graduated from Cornell University. Actually started off as a SDET, or a software development engineer in test, meaning basically I was doing like QA automation. And I worked at two different teams at Microsoft for about 6.5 years. After about like 5.5 years, I gained a management role there. So that was my first foray into management.
Do you mind if I interrupt you there for one thing? I mean, was that something that you were pursuing, or did that kind of just the natural progression for the role you were in?
Yeah. It's funny because I honestly think that, so I think there's a common misconception in sort of the software community that like in order to get promoted, in order to move up, you have to move into management. And probably at that time in my life, I was in that mindset. And it was sort of like, cool, I'm moving up, I've moved into management. But I don't think I really solidified that I was like, cool, I want to be a manager until later in my career, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and we could talk about that later, this sort of common misconception, and maybe less so these days, but just because everyone's heard it. And a lot of companies have sort of technical career paths as well as managerial career paths. But I think, you know, whatever, this was like 2007, 2008, I was moved into a management role. And it was what I wanted. But shortly after leaving Microsoft, I joined a company called Palantir in Palo Alto. And I, throughout my 7.5 years there, I really flip-flop a lot between like individual contributor and management. And I just kept going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I think the reason why I kept going back and forth was because on one hand, I love solving technical problems. I like programming. I like building things. But then on the other hand, I find the people problems also super interesting. And every time I would move far enough into the management track on the people side, I would start losing my technical skills. And then I would panic. And I would say, oh my God, I'm losing my technical skills. I need to go back to being an individual contributor so that I can beef those up, because, you know, otherwise I'm never going to have a career. And so I would go back, and then I'd be like, cool, my technical skills were good, and go back into management, back and forth, back and forth. And maybe halfway or three quarters of the way into Palantir, I told myself, I really need to make a decision. Like, I need to figure this out. And that was really when it was like, cool, like, I am settling on the management path. And when Handshake reached out to me, I took the role at Handshake. It was for an engineering manager role. And that was sort of my commitment to myself. Like, cool, this, I'm an engineering manager. I'm committing to this path and I'm going to move forward from there. Because flip-flopping back and forth was never going to land me into, say, the role I am in today. If I'm constantly fickle with which career path I want to take. So,
yeah. And would you say that you, I mean, is that struggle, are you kind of beyond it at this point, or do you still feel the pull back to be involved at a more technical level, or like your skill set is almost, I'm not sure if the right word is, but not becoming irrelevant, but you know, you're not keeping up the technical knowledge or whatever.
Yeah. So I've, throughout the years, the lesson has more been around how to handle situations without necessarily knowing all the details. And I think that was the big lesson for me during my days at Palantir, right? I can still be technical. I can still, you know, understand at a high level how our code base works. Or when someone talks about a problem, I may understand at first at the high level, and then I have the option to dig a little bit deeper. But, you know, initially when I moved in to sort of a manager, a manager's role at Palantir, I got super stressed out because I was like, oh, I don't understand how this part of the code base works. I don't understand how this part of the code base works. And so I need to touch and code all the things and actually understand things, you know, line by line to be a great manager. And of course that doesn't scale, right? Especially as you have more people reporting to you. And so it was more about being comfortable, not knowing every single little thing. So I would say that was the big lesson for me. And I am of the belief that I think every engineering manager does need to stay technical to some degree, but you know, they may not be coding every day.
Yeah. So what would you recommend for someone, especially coming into a new company? Like, I know when you came to Handshake, you actually did do a fair amount of coding at different points. So you did develop that familiarity with the code base and probably at least felt like, okay, I can be productive in this and I know how everything works well enough. I mean, do you feel like that is pretty important to get like that level of knowledge? If you're, especially when you're not a manager of managers, but you're a manager of like ICs. I mean, what's the right balance there?
Yeah, that one's tough, you know, and it depends on the company. It depends on like, you know, what type of company you're moving into, what type of manager they expect you to be, etc. So I think what is really important is to really clarify upfront with the company what type of manager you are and what you bring to the table, and what you're expected to do and what you know you don't want to do, right? So I was like pretty clear with Handshake, because I think a lot of startups look for like these unicorn managers, and they exist, you know, where they're just like, not only are they amazing people managers, but they're also really amazing technicians and architects, engineers. And so I remember asking Handshake up front, like, cool, like, which one are you looking for? Because, and this was literally in the first second interview. And I was like, because if you're looking for this unicorn manager, I'm not it. I think I'm pretty good technically, but I'm much better as a people manager. And so to set those expectations up front, I think is very important because, you know, like the cliche, like, sure, you're interviewing with the company, but you're also, you know, you're also, it goes the other way around, right? However, to answer your more direct question, I just, my style, how it works is I work with a lot of empathy. And so actually like have a hard time understanding things if I have a hard time empathizing with something. So if the engineers are complaining about, you know, our continuous integration system is slow, it takes X number of minutes for it to complete. If I don't have that same experience, or if I don't like touch it and kind of understand and feel it, then it's a little bit harder for me to really like feel that pain. And so I'm really glad at the beginning I dove into some code. And I think I did it within like, you know, in a year into my career at Handshake before it was almost, you know, I almost had to really back away. And, you know, in the end, like I only had a team of like 3 or 4 people initially. And so that's not a full management load. So I was happy to contribute because I still love like coding and solving technical problems and asking you to solve all my dev environment issues, et cetera.
That's what we're here for.
So you mentioned earlier that you potentially ended up being a manager early on because of the misconception that you saw that that was the only way to like progress. Do you think you would be in a different spot today, or do you still think you would be in a very similar position to where you are today if you hadn't had that misconception?
I honestly, you know, so maybe to rephrase it, if I were, you know, since I also think like the software industry has changed in culture a lot. And like back in 2007, 2008, I don't know how many companies really had both like a manager track and an IC track. But, you know, if let's say I was, whatever, 27 in like today's era, I think I would be less prone to that misconception. But you also have to be at a company that really preaches that and really shows by example that like these leaders still exist. In the end, you know, not every engineer makes a really good manager, and vice versa, not every manager makes a really great engineer. And I think the main thing I would say is that like focus on your strengths, focus on what you love to do. Because if you don't, and you're just chasing that promotion or whatever, then you're going to be in a world of trouble in your career down the line. So
do you have any advice to anyone who feels like they're at that crossroads, trying to figure out if they should go down the IC path or the management path?
Give it some time, and it involves a lot of self-reflection, to be quite honest. And maybe you can be like, you know, both, right? In the end, I guess, like, you know, aside from those two pieces of advice, like in the end, the third one that I would say is just like, do what you're good at and makes you happy and can like give you a path forward in your career, right? And those are like, it sounds so simple, but those are questions that can honestly take you like a year or two to really understand like where you want to go. In the end though, maybe the fourth piece of advice is if you're stuck at that crossroads and you've been stuck there for a while, just commit to one. And you know, if it was the wrong path, forget it. You know, then great, like go to the other path. There's no point in just getting stuck in this crossroads and just like going back and forth. I'm not sure. Just pick one path and then explore that. And then, you know, like if you deem that ultimately, like, this is not the role for me, you know, pick the other path. A lot of it also depends on the company, right? Being a manager at Palantir is being very is very different from being a manager at Handshake. And so you shouldn't strike it out immediately either. But maybe just like at this particular company with this culture, it may not be the right fit. But figure out the role that you can use that, figure out the role that you want to get in where you can make the most impact and, you know, still make the biggest difference.
It's reassuring to hear. I think I'm at the stage right now. I've recently made the transition from IC to manager. And honestly, it's, you know, something I've struggled with, to switch from the maker to manager mindset. But I am committed at this point. You know, I think it's been about 6 months and I feel like, you know, I'm gonna do this for at least a year. I feel like if I can find my flow in as a manager. But yeah, I do think it does feel like this thing that I just need to give it enough time to even understand if this is, like, to try it out long enough to really know if this is the right move.
You're doing great, Chris. You can do it. and to that point, right, like, you don't have to be a manager to be a leader, right? And so as I'm talking to both you, you know, Chris, you're down the manager path, you know, and leadership is associated with that. But Spencer here is, like, very much a leader in our architecture, doesn't manage anybody. And in both roles, in both ways, you're demonstrating leadership. So
as you're kind of mentioning, you started at Microsoft and then worked at Palantir and now are at Handshake. So roughly saying that's going from a larger to like a mid-size to like a smaller startup. Was that an intentional decision or is that just coincidental? And if it was a decision, like, what was kind of the motivations of those decisions?
Sure. Yeah. So definitely going from large to from Microsoft to Palantir was a very intentional decision. It's funny, you know, when I look back on those days, I used to think my goal coming out of Microsoft was initially, I want to be the first CEO who isn't an asshole. And that was my tagline. I would actually, like, tell people in interviews, like, this, because, you know, at these large corporations, or at least at the time, every manager that I met and then the higher up I met these people, it just really seemed like, you know, you just have to be a real jerk to get into these management roles. And then the bigger jerk you were, the higher up you were. And I hated it. And it just went so against my principles. Ugh. And so when I took the role at Palantir, one of the intentions was to get out of the politics and get out of big company culture and just explore startup life. So when I joined Palantir, I was employee around 200. So it was still kind of smallish then. And just comparing and contrasting Microsoft and Palantir, I mean, it just was a huge difference. It was just like, no politics. I don't have to kiss up to people. You know, there isn't this game you have to play. And so, so then after, you know, I stayed at Palantir, and then Palantir has grown to, you know, a 2,000-ish person company. I decided, like, I like that small company feel. And so I stuck with Handshake to go back to, you know, some of that small company feel.
One thing that I think is interesting about your career too is you've worked in so many different tech markets, you know, Seattle, London, San Francisco, and now Denver. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yeah. You got them all, Chris.
Nice.
Little LinkedIn stalking never hurts.
I just know just Robin well enough that
we were able to lift him off.
Does anything stick out to you about the differences in some of those different tech markets? Like, what are some of the good and bad parts of, you know, things you've seen?
That's a really good question. I'm going to try to be really unbiased here because, and objective, because there are certain cities, as you guys know, that I really do not like, and there are certain cities that I love. So to talk a little bit about Denver, where I am today, what's really cool about Denver is that I really feel like the tech scene is really like burgeoning. It's sort of, you know, it's here. It's present. People know it's here. But there just isn't as much presence yet. There's a lot more opportunity. There is this kind of fun feeling of like tech could blow up here. Tech could also just kind of stagnate here. But it's really exciting to see companies like Handshake, Slack has moved here. They built an office here. I know Palantir has built an office here. So it's really cool to see it kind of budding and growing. And I'm really excited to see how it grows. And it's also kind of fun for me as somebody who's a little bit competitive. And, you know, I'm starting up the Handshake office here. So it's kind of fun for me because, you know, Handshake's landed here. And now I get to compete, you know, with all these companies for awesome talent. And it's stressful, but fun. And I kind of find that challenging. I kind of find that challenge really interesting. Compared to, you know, SF, I think is almost becoming super saturated. You know, there's a lot of talent there, but there's just so many companies. I'm very mission focused, whether it's, you know, Palantir's mission or Handshake's mission. I just find there are just a lot of companies there that are like, I don't know, everyone's trying to build a startup and try to make it rich. It doesn't ever seem it. Well, I take that back. It seems like people are just trying to make a pretty penny rather than trying to make a difference sometimes. And then Seattle, I heard the Seattle landscape has changed a lot. When I was there, Google hadn't moved in, and now Google has this amazing campus. Fun fact, I almost bought a house in like the neighborhood next door to where Google moved in. So missed investment opportunity there. but I think Seattle is just kind of that nice balance between, SF and Denver. Though I heard it's becoming a lot like San Francisco, where there might be this sort of class divide that's happening, which is kind of one of the unfortunate things about tech. It can cause this like large class divide, and you'll see it in San Francisco. And then London is great. What I like about London is that you'll be walking around and, you know, you'll meet somebody and they will most likely not be in tech. Kind of like New York, you know, you walk around and there's all sorts of different people, all sorts of different flavors. And, you know, it's fun to like nerd out with your fellow techies, but, you know, it's also nice to like go to a party, meet somebody and like meet somebody who is not in tech and be like, cool, what is that like? What's it like being an artist, et cetera?
Yeah, it's really easy to stay in the bubble.
Exactly, yeah. I would often sometimes like, if they're like, what do you do? You know, somebody asked me in San Francisco. I'd almost say it like, I'm a software engineer. Just kind of like, I'm sorry, I have to disappoint you because everybody else in San Francisco is a software engineer. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
No, I hear you. I mean, for me, working remotely, it's interesting because I don't work in one of the handful of large employers in the area. And like what I'm doing is a little bit unique, but when you're doing the same thing everyone around you is doing, yeah, I get it. There's a sense of,
I get it.
But I do think you have a really, you mentioned you're starting up the Denver office. And I think this is our second office. We've also ramped up hiring remotely. I'd love to dig in a little bit more about some of the challenges around scaling outside of San Francisco. You know, starting with just what's it been like, your experience starting up that Denver office, you know, going from, I mean, you moved out there by yourself to start it up. And now there's a dozen people working out of the office there with you around that.
Yeah. About a dozen.
Yeah. What's that experience been like, and what are some of the challenges and maybe advice for people going through, like realizing that they need to expand outside of, you know, the West Coast or East Coast or whatever?
Yeah. I mean, this is all still happening. And to be frank, I only moved here, I think at the end of February. So, you know, it's been, I guess, 6 months. And I've thought a lot about this, and me and my manager have talked a lot about this. One of the challenges, personally for me, is that it's quite a lonely experience. And this is how I imagine maybe some like CEOs feel, or like people in like upper management. I think like as you start kind of getting further down the management path, you know, like engineering manager, senior engineering manager, director, etc., what you don't realize is that it starts becoming a lonelier and lonelier experience. And, you know, a lot of us have moved into management because we care about people, and we're people. And, but the problem is, you know, for example, starting up this office in Denver, is that I have, you know, hired dozen people. I know maybe one person outside of work, and everybody else pretty much more or less reports to me in some form or fashion. Maybe there's a manager in between, but they report to me. And on one hand, I don't want that to change the dynamic of, you know, our relationship. I love bantering and making friends with anyone, even if it's direct reports, etc. But I also recognize that there's a barrier, right? You can't always, maybe you can be your like 90% self sometimes with certain people, but you can't always be your 100% self. And like, you can't show like favoritism. And you have to really watch out for some of those dynamics, right? And so when you think about it, I am this person who is shipped from San Francisco to Denver, knew one person, hired these 12 people. These 12 people are awesome, like both technically and personality-wise in every which way. But, you know, in the end, sometimes like if I need to vent about one of my employees because they're bothering me, or you know, vent about some, just anything, I can't always like pull like, you know, my direct report aside and be like, hey, guess what Chris did or something, this bothers me so much. So I think that's been actually one of the more challenging things for me, and it was quite unexpected. To talk a little bit maybe more of something that's a little bit less personal, I also think another challenge is just understanding the culture here. Having been someone who moved from San Francisco to Denver, I don't really know what the Denver tech scene is. I don't fully understand it. For example, this is something quite small, but like I've actually interviewed people and they would say, oh yeah, that's a 30-minute commute for me. No thanks. And I just think to myself, like 30 minutes in the Bay Area, that's like on point. That's amazing. And so, you know, and people actually really care about commute here in Denver. That's something small, but I think there are other like factors around the Denver tech culture or Denver work culture that I still need to understand and wrap my head around.
Yeah. I think one thing that's really interesting too is that, and you mentioned it's kind of, it's not as saturated and it's not quite as competitive. So I think we've, relative to hiring in San Francisco, we've been relatively successful hiring in Denver. We continue to find great people, and is it safe to say it's relatively easy compared to San Francisco to do that?
Relatively, yeah. It's still right. Hard, but yeah, relatively right. Easier.
So, I mean, we've started to tap into that on other teams outside of yours too. And some of those teams are remote. What's it been like kind of building other teams there when you're still kind of the only person in the office you're kind of representing Handshake, not just employer engineering when there's university or like student team engineer there. I just think that's kind of an interesting setup and like situation to be in. I'm curious what kind of, you know, challenges. I mean, it's been great in some ways, like I mentioned, but what are some of the challenges around that?
Yeah, so to give some like more concrete numbers, so most of my team is out here in Denver. There are 4 people who are not on my team who come to the Denver office. And
you also manage some engineers back in San Francisco as well.
Yes. Yeah, managing folks in San Francisco as well. Some challenges there is, in the end, I'm responsible for the Denver office culture and building out this office, right? And so, there's a time when I need to think about my engineering team, but then there's a time when I need to think about all of the Denver office. So, something more minute, not minute, but smaller, is that our office manager back in SF calls me the most expensive office manager in like the world, because basically I have to spend a lot of my time doing office manager responsibilities. So who's going to populate the snack, you know, our snack area, right, that we would like to advertise as a fun little benefit? Who's going to order drinks? Who's going to, you know, figure out who needs more space in our co-working space? And I had to be very proactive in figuring all that stuff out, and also try to make like a good case around that stuff. How many hours a day do we spend like taking care of our office, right? Also, I think one challenge recently has been around just like inclusion. And because I talk to my direct reports every day, so sometimes you might say like, hey, let's go out to whatever, happy hour. And we'll be like, yeah, we've talked about it in an employer meeting. And then we go out as an employer team. And then we're like, oh crap, we forgot to invite everybody else. So I think it's just the size. And we need to do better here in terms of inclusion and making sure that everybody is available for all the other frills that we do as we expand out this culture.
Yeah. Is there anything specific that you did to establish the culture that you wanted? And you're starting from nothing. It's kind of an interesting opportunity to establish, you know, it's really just what you want. You can really influence it. You have a lot of influence over it right now when there is no office culture already established. So, I mean, was there anything that you did intentionally to kind of set that?
Honestly, it is actually very similar to just like, it is what you want. So my theory in building out a culture or building out a team is that, sure, like, you don't have to be best friends, but when you are thinking about maybe looking for a new role, or when you think about, switching jobs or careers, I want you to think in the end, oh, but wait, I don't want to leave these people because they're so awesome in whatever way. And so that's my theory. So I think in order to get that feeling of what I just described, for me, it's about kind of having a little bit of fun. You know, I can be a little bit, I don't want to say sarcastic, but just kind of jokey, very like, I kind of like office banter. Some people in our office don't like office banter, but they just appreciate that, you know, we'll talk about each other's lives outside of work every now and then, whether in one-on-ones or just like, you know, over lunch. And while that seems obvious and it's a small thing, but like continuing to do that and like really getting to know everyone at a personal level, and at the same time, making myself seem more human and revealing things about myself, my feelings, etc. That's sort of what I was consciously doing. So effectively building a team that I trust and that trusts me back. So I do that via a little bit of fun here and there.
Yeah. Well, I know we're at time here. I think all of us have to jump into other meetings, but this has been great. Thank you so much for your time, Robin. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And insight. Any kind of parting words for anyone listening?
No. Don't be pressured to join management. It's a different beast. And happy to answer any more questions at any time y'all have any questions around management life and management philosophy, et cetera.
All right. We'll make sure to put your phone number in the show notes. Just kidding. But thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. If anyone wants to check out show notes for this episode, go to rubberducking.fm/18. Please email us with any feedback and thoughts at hosts@rubberducking.fm.
Thanks, guys.